welcome to the Morning Mix special live broadcast with the Utah Symphony. JW here with Christy Dillaway. We are broadcasting live from Abravano Hall, where the Utah Symphony rehearses before their summer performances at the Deer Valley Music Festival, which is their summer residency.
In fact, the entire Utah Symphony themselves will be our live musical guests this hour. Obviously, we couldn't fit them into the KPCW studios, so we came down here to join them. And we're thrilled to be joined right now by Rick Springfield. He is the Symphony's guest artist for tonight's performance at the Deer Valley Music Festival. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us this morning. So I was reading your bio. Of course, I know a lot about you, starting from when you were Dr. Noah Drake on General Hospital. That goes back to my era. But you were already a well-known artist in Australia. I read that you were going in the direction of being a teen pop idol, and you didn't like that direction. Seems like that would be every boy's dream.
Not every musician's dream, though. It's a very short road. So actually, in Australia, I was known as a guitar player and was in a fairly heavy band over there. The teen thing happened when I came over here in 1972. And the teen magazines kind of latched onto me, and I didn't really know. I'd never seen a teen magazine before, so I thought they were just regular music press. And I'd give interviews about my music and writing and all that kind of stuff. And the article would come out, you know, like, is Rick Springfield too tall to love? And crazy stuff like that.
Sort of demeaned your music?
Nothing to do with the music. It was all about looks. And so I bailed on that about 1974.
Was that Zoot?
No, Zoot was the Australian band. It was actually it started out as a team band, but when I joined them, I made them very guitar oriented, and we kind of became like Australia's Who for a while.
So then you showed them all when you won your Grammy. And what year was that? 1981.
I think so, something like that. Yeah.
And that was for Jesse's Girl, for that album, right, or that song?
Yep.
Since then, you've got 16 albums out, including the newest one, The Snake King. You wrote an autobiography and a work of fiction. Your autobiography, Late at Night, was one of Rolling Stone's top 25 rock memoirs of all time. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. I actually wrote it myself, and they set me up with a writer like they usually do, and I read, she did like a chapter, and I read it, and I thought, well, this could be anybody. So I'd already written like 30,000 words myself, so I sent it to my publisher, and she flipped out. She loved my voice and encouraged me to write more. I'm actually writing my second novel now, and I always thought I'd be a writer. I mean, I channeled that into songwriting when I realized girls are more attracted to musicians than authors. But now I'm getting back to it. Now I've been married for a few years.
So how do you balance all of this? You have a music career, you have an acting career, you have a writing career. What are the things you'd like over the next 10 years you'd like to put more time into, and how does all that work?
I want to put time into all of it. I'm actually upping a lot of the time I dedicate to it all. We're really pushing the acting thing now. I've gotten some things recently that got, you know, some good reviews and press and showed that I can actually act, which is kind of a must, I guess. but I mean, writing, I can do that anywhere. I have a lot of downtime on the road, so I'm writing, always have a laptop. It's really not, it's not like I run out of time. It's more like, I don't know, you just, I just want to get it done, you know, so I'm very driven person.
And in your latest release, The Snake King, you did a lot of that writing. Did you do all of the writing?
Yes, I wrote and okay. produced that.
So just tell us about your songwriting process.
Snake King is a very different record. It's a very challenging record. It's saying a lot of things, talking about a lot of stuff that I don't usually haven't usually talked about. And it's a blues rock approach. I used to be in blues bands when I was a kid, so it was kind of a natural. It seemed like the appropriate musical avenue for what I wanted to say. And there's a lot, you know, we're got some pretty nutty leaders and around the world, and we're not treating the planet very well, and you know, I kind of see evil everywhere, and I just wonder where God's hand is, and it has a lot to do with that. Basically, it's someone said to sum it up in three words, so it's God, the devil, and sex, the album.
Well, it's dark. The video for the Voodoo House,
Voodoo
House, yes, quite dark and swampy. I love that sound. So
we're doing that tonight. Actually, we do that one live, and it's really fun to play live because it does have a lot of slide guitar in it. And we actually shot the video in the bayou in New Orleans because where else would
it
you go?
Fits,
I guess,
right?
For a song called The Voodoo House.
Let's talk about what the show tonight will be like, because people might know your music, but then you front the symphony. To me, that's always the, like, how does that work?
It changed the show completely. We have actually three shows we do. We do the band show, which are like, you know, pedal to the metal rock and roll show. There's a solo storyteller show that I do that's all about stories and a lot of comedy and, you know, and humor and a lot of home photographs. You know, we have video screens. And then there's a symphony show that we just started, and it's incredible. And it changed. I thought, well, is it just going to be like the band show with a symphony? But it totally changed it. I mean, I don't play as much guitar, and it's more about presenting the songs with this and allowing the symphony to be heard. And we actually have got comments from a lot of the people we've worked with saying it's so great that you allow the symphony to be heard, because a lot of these shows the guys just crank it up and you don't really hear the amazing work that these players are doing, and the charts are amazing. We have actually tonight we have Wolf Kershak, who wrote all the charts, a German writer, and he wrote all the charts. He'll be conducting the show tonight as well. So it's really great stuff. It's very exciting for us because it's so different.
And you've done it with other symphonies, but now this is your first meeting with the Utah Symphony right mm-hmm. now, this morning, the rehearsal that you're going into. What's that like? What's that process?
I was very nervous the first couple of times we did this because there's 40 people you've never met or played with. But I don't read music. I write music, but I don't know how to read music, you know, notation. So it just amazes me that 40 people can put charts up, and the conductor raises his hand, and they play, and it all works. And it, like, blew my mind the first time I saw it. I said, wow, this is, like, insane. And it's incredible that they can do that. I'm in awe of that.
I am, too. And we were speaking to the conductor this time last year when we did a similar show with the symphony, and he was saying, because I was asking him about how much interpretation can the individual musician
right.
do? And he was saying that as he was following
the chart,
I think it was Cats or something from one city to another with different orchestras uh-huh. in each one, that the sound was different in every city because the musicians were allowed to interpret it. I always thought the maestro interpreted the way it's going to be, but there's lots of room for collaboration.
Oh, that's I haven't seen that because I'm focusing on the audience when I perform. But I'm sure the musicians are talented enough to, you know, sometimes there are players who if they don't have a piece of music in front of them, they can't play. You know, they can't just well, where's the music? So and then there are players like me who you stick a sheet of music in front of them, and they go, Is this Greek? What is this? I don't know this language. So, but to have the both of them is a great talent, actually, to be able to read and stick to, you know, the structure of a chart, but still allow yourself to work around that. That's amazing to me.
Well, you look so relaxed. I mean, you've come in here. They've just set up. We've been here since early this morning, and we saw everybody setting up, and now the symphony will be in here soon. And you just look so relaxed about this. You're going to come in and have your single rehearsal for tonight's performance. But you've done this before.
Yeah, I guess I have confidence in the musicians now, and I certainly have confidence in the charts that Wolf wrote. And I have confidence in the band now, because it's a very different thing for band. We got to have clicks in our ears, and you know, we're much, much, much softer than we normally play. And it's an attitude adjust, basically, and it does really turn the show into a different thing. I mean, it's like, you know, I feel like I'm Frank Sinatra out there sometimes. You know, it's very weird for a rock musician, but I have confidence in the players now. I know that they're all. If they're, you know, a big symphony orchestra like this, that they are there for a reason. You know, they've been selected for a reason.
And is there any conversation from you during the show?
Oh, yeah.
Storytelling of the song?
Sure, yeah. I talk, you know, not as much as, like, maybe the storyteller show. But yeah, there's explanations for some of the songs, and I joke around. And it, from my perspective, it's a pretty loose show. But once the song started, you know, we have videos and you know, click to keep everybody together, and it's sometimes it's like math, and I was never very good at math in school. So
the Deer Valley audience is very warm. They're absolutely jazzed that they are the summer home of the Utah Symphony.
Yeah, I bet.
And they're looking forward to your performance. I think you'll really enjoy the audience and the venue tonight.
It's great. It was some of the places get a little nervous because a lot of my hardcore fans who come out to see this are used to, you know, getting up to the stage and yeah, this kind of thing. So they're a little. We did two nights in San Diego, and the first night they kind of rushed the stage, and the second night there was a red velvet rope across the front, and they actually announced no singing or dancing. And I went out there and I said, really, that's kind of like saying, you know, you're at a comedy store. If you find the jokes funny, I'm sorry, no laughing, take it outside. So I said, it's okay. I mean, I understood that there had to be certain parameters because there are, you know, a lot of the people who support the symphony have the front seats, and I get that. I get they want, you know, an unobstructed view, and they don't want crazy people jumping all around them. So they made a little dance area over to the side, and it was great. It's, you know, it's just those kind of things sometimes throw the the people who have run the symphony a little bit kind of whoa.
You can't legislate rock and roll. When they tried to tell Elvis not to move his hips, I mean, it's just going to happen. That train left the station.
Yeah, it really is. And I honestly, you know, I said at this, when I was announcing this at the San Diego show, I was saying, I became a musician because I figured it was the closest thing to a pirate, you know, without rules, as little rules as possible. So
I definitely like the opportunity to dance, but the part about everyone singing along, there are times where I came to hear you, yeah, and I'm hearing all the people around me. So maybe it is good to say, like, this is one we sing along to. And
yeah. Well, they kind of get it after a while. You know, certainly San Diego, they finally, okay, I get, you know, this is not a rock and roll show. It's a symphony show. So we've got to have a little more class here.
Break a leg tonight. Best of luck. Have a great time. We'll be listening to the rehearsal, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's gonna be really fun. It's a lot of rehearsal. You know, it's surprising, and none of us are usually up this hour of the morning, so it's kind of shocking.
Hence the dark glasses.
Yes, my system is going, why are we up?
Rick Springfield, everybody's performing with the Utah Symphony at the Deer Valley Snow Park Lodge at the amphitheater, and it's going to be beautiful weather. And I think it's sold out.
Really looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, they should check online for tickets. I might have misspoken, but you should always check online for tickets.
Come along.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Joining us now here in our little studio here at Abravanel Hall in the lobby. Rick, thank you, man. Is Toby Tolikin. He's the Vice President of Artistic Planning for the Utah Symphony. Toby, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to be here. Thanks for coming down to Abravanel, making the trek.
Yeah. Oh, just love your mic. Get nice and close to your mic.
Thanks.
Okay, there we go. And I wanted to ask you before we started talking about artistic development, I was talking with Renee Huang before we started, and she was telling me about the blind auditions that you do, you know, those sorts of things. I remember seeing that in movies, but Maestro in the Jungle, or what was it? Mozart in the Jungle. So tell us about that. That's a tough process.
Yeah, some orchestras in the U.S. do it a little differently, but the Utah Symphony does blind auditions, meaning that the audition candidates come in one at a time and are always behind a screen, even into the final round. A lot of times, some orchestras take the screen down for final round, but to make sure there's absolutely no possibility of any discrimination. Everybody is anonymous. They have a number or a letter, and then there is actually a carpet, so shoes don't even make an impact.
You can't tell if it's high heels or sneakers.
And most people are not wearing high heels anyways. But what's really amazing about Utah Symphony and all the great American orchestras, and there's many of them, we're only one of 15 now full-time, meaning 52-week orchestras, because it's not easy to support that amount of work. We're lucky to have the opera and the symphony merge during the winter, and then having the Deer Valley Music Festival in the summer, and that's what gives us the product for the year. But the auditions are, sometimes we can have as many as 200 to 250 applicants for one position,
wow,
a string position, a flute position, or brass position, whichever. And then we have to whittle that down, and maybe 45, maybe 50 people are invited to come. And by the way, it's not like having a interview process for a regular business, because this is a nonprofit. We cannot pay for their expenses. So these people are taking a chance, maybe only playing once, because maybe they get the famous Broadway thank you, but not immediately. There's always, you know, 15 or 20 minutes of playing. But to get to the next round is a big step. So we whittle it down to maybe two or three rounds. But what's amazing, as I said, is they have to pay their own airfare, their own hotel, their own food and other expenses to get here and go for it.
Wow.
Because it's just a great position to get to. And there's so many great students coming out of the conservatories. I wish there were more orchestras and more positions.
Yeah.
But this is a great place to live too. So it's a very exciting place to audition for.
Toby, how do you build a summer season? Because the festivals, the music festivals, and there are so many cities in our country that are putting these types of things on. So there's a lot of competition.
Absolutely.
When do you start in the planning process?
Well, we always start with the dates, and obviously we're in that July, August to mid-August time at Park City, at Snow Park, because we go into vacation period before we go back indoors in after Labor Day, so, and then repeat that process. But we're always planning, we're always working, and things fall in and out. As you probably saw, we had a cancellation from Kristen Chenoweth from her doctor's orders to just take it easy and not do concerts for a while. Lucky to have Sutton Foster come in. And in fact, my understanding is Sutton Foster has taken over almost all of Kristen's other summer concerts, including a tour with Bocelli, which was including the Hollywood Bowl, you know, wow, the great tenor. So these kind of things come up. Cancellations are rare in the summer or any time, but when we have them, we have to deal with them, and we're lucky that Sutton was here. And if people don't know Sutton Foster, obviously a great artist who sang with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir this past holiday concerts. So they have people have another opportunity to hear her in full concert form.
That's tomorrow night, correct?
That is tomorrow night, yes. And so that's what's also amazing about this festival. Three different programs every week, which is, we don't even do that in the wintertime. We do multiple rehearsals for one concert, and then we do it two or three times. Here, we're doing the opposite. We're doing three different programs, and we have to really be efficient on rehearsals. So as you were saying with Rick, one rehearsal today for tonight's concert, one rehearsal tomorrow morning for Sutton's concert, and the Wednesday chamber concerts have a couple more, because that's a little more intricate programming with the Classical Chamber Orchestra at St. Mary's.
So let me just be clear. So if I'm a musician in the symphony, have I already rehearsed with the rest of the symphony these works?
No.
Or today is the only day?
Yeah, this is why there's 250 people applying for a position, and why we have to come up with only one person at the end of the run, because they have to be so incredibly prepared and efficient. Like Rick was saying, he's amazed that they look at the chart for the first time and boom, it happens. And the fact that the conductor knows the show is actually the most important, because that's where the efficiency comes from. If somebody comes in blind to the charts as the conductor, then we may be a little bit more tense. But this will be very comfortable, because the conductor, Rick, and the arrangements have all been done before elsewhere.
So Wolf comes in, he's done the arrangements, and he comes in and he knows the band, he knows Rick Springfield's organization.
And he knows his own charts, because he's done them. Yeah.
And he knows his own charts.
Right.
But the musicians, the 40 musicians that are rehearsing this morning, they've never worked with Wolf before.
And by the way, that's a little low number. It's actually more like 70.
70,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We have 87 full-time musicians in the orchestra, but
okay,
we can't necessarily always fit all of those people in the Snow Park stage. But we're definitely more than 40 tonight and tomorrow and the rest of the festival. Yeah.
So is that more difficult because because the musicians aren't used to working with Wolf?
Well, I think because of his background and his knowledge of the show, it's going to be very, very good.
Okay.
And look forward to working with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the whole season as you put it together and you conceptualize how to create a balanced summer season for the Deer Valley Music Festival. Because you do some Disney and Broadway, pop. This one will be probably pop and blues. Mm-hmm. Is that a conscious effort to, you know, create the palette?
In some ways, but to be very honest, it's mostly when are these people available versus our dates, and that's what the puzzle is to make it work, because all of these people are in such demand, and if they don't necessarily want to do what we call an isolated date, we have to make sure they're kind of coming from some
routed
other
through.
Place nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Routed is the word. So a lot of this, we do get help from the managements with being in touch with them and saying, so who's at Red Rocks, who's here, who's going there, and that's how it works, slowly, very slowly.
But if you're at Red Rocks, it doesn't mean you're playing with a symphony orchestra.
That's true.
Right, so
yes.
Is that something that you or someone in this area goes, hey, how would you like to play with our symphony? Or is the artist thinking, I've done these other things, how about if I go the symphony route?
Well, that's part of it, and what you mentioned is there's an example this summer of where we're creating a completely new show called 70s versus 80s with two great singers, Constantine Maroulis, who was in Rock of Ages, who's making his debut with us, and Carpathia Jenkins, wonderful singer who's been with us multiple times. And this is a show that Edwin Outwater and Utah Symphony, Edwin Outwater is conducting four concerts this summer, and a program that we created together from scratch, which is rare for us. We're usually doing something that, like Rick and Sutton, have done before elsewhere. But we're excited that we're putting some effort into making our own charts and making a whole new show.
Could that potentially go on the road to other places?
We'll see. We'll see what the reaction is first from those very important VIP donors that we love and the rest of the audience.
Yeah. Hey, Toby, I'm curious about this. When you put together the schedule and you have people sort of penciled in, you now have to do contracts. Are there separate contracts for every artist?
Absolutely, and they're quite involved. And there's, let me just say, slightly exhaustingly, there is a lot of redlining that goes back and forth. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly.
All the managements have a little bit of different version of the contract language.
But yeah. Toby Tolikin is the Vice President of Artistic Planning for the Utah Symphony, I believe also the Utah Opera.
No, Utah Opera has Christopher Macbeth as his artistic director, and he plans all of those. And thank God he's there, because it's a big season.
It is a big season.
Can I just mention a little shout-out to some great people that are with the orchestra? My colleagues in operations and stage management are really the heroes of the summer. They make this happen, and they have to go up and down, not only to run the concerts every day and back to the rehearsals, but the guys have to bring the equipment back and forth. You know, the double basses, the harps, all of that goes up in cartage system. And it's unbelievable that doing that three times a week and then being there till, you know, all hours. So I give them so much credit. The heroes of the summer are the stage crew and company, and the orchestra, of course.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll probably see you tonight, too.
I hope so. Thanks.
Okay. If you're just joining us in the Morning Mix, we are live at Abravano Hall, and we'll be here with the symphony and with folks from the symphony. We're going to go back to the studio, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
Escape into the music at the Utah Symphony's Deer Valley Music Festival. On July 27th, experience a night under the stars with soulful singer-songwriter Amos Lee as he makes his Utah Symphony debut performing songs from his acclaimed albums. Then on July 28th, enjoy the thrilling suite from Star Wars, the awe-inspiring score from Jurassic Park, and the whimsical sounds of Harry Potter as the Utah Symphony performs the music of John Williams. For tickets, visit deervalleymusicfestival.org. The Utah Symphony is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
KPCW supporters, your nonprofit community, public radio stations, summer pledge drive, and online auction is August 20th through August 24th. You can bid on amazing online auction items all week at kpcw.org or call in a pledge. Don't worry, we will give you the number. Your contributions make public radio possible in Summit and Wasatch counties. KPCW summer pledge drive, the difference being you. Give to KPCW.
Earl Foote here with Nexus IT, keeping KPCW ready for the next breaking story. Nexus IT can help its customers move to the cloud to keep business technology up to date. The cloud grows with its users by offering solutions for startups, storage, and sustainability. 435-487-9099 or nexusitc.net.
931, our forecast high today, 86, with just a slight chance of an isolated shower and thunder shower after noon. Overnight low 58. Now back to our live broadcast with the Utah Symphony.
And welcome back to the Morning Mix. We're broadcasting live from Abravanel Hall in downtown Salt Lake City. Our musical guest this hour is the entire Utah Symphony and Rick Springfield. We're going to get to listen in on their rehearsal with Rick in just a minute. They're performing tonight with Rick and his guest conductor, Wolf Kershick, at Deer Valley's Outdoor Amphitheater, the summer home of the Utah Symphony.
We just got to speak with Rick Springfield and with Utah Symphony Vice President of Artistic Planning, Toby Tolikin. So as the Utah Symphony is a 501c3 nonprofit and Utah's largest and oldest performing arts nonprofit, in the second half of the hour, we'll speak with the Vice President of Development, Leslie Peterson, and with Paula Fowler, Director of Education and Community Outreach. But right now, we're going to give you a rundown of weekend events happening in Park City and Summit and Wasatch Counties.
All right, folks, I'll start off. This weekend is the Camas Valley Fiesta Days, a yearly tradition for over 70 years. Friday events include a parade, bull wars, fireworks, and a community dance. The Egyptian Theater carries on their musical production of The Who's Tommy, and shows are Thursday through Sundays now through next weekend.
Summit County Library is screening the children's movie Sing at 1 p.m. today at the Kimball Junction Library. It's free, and there's free popcorn, too.
And the Park City Museum offers guided historic Main Street walking tours Monday through Fridays, so there's one today, now through August 31st. They leave from the Main Street Park City History Museum at 2 p.m., cost $7.
The Heber Valley Railroad is running their Sunset Barbecue special train excursion tonight.
The Timpanogos Valley Theater offers a country dance lesson, a bunch of lessons tonight for all ages at 8 p.m. at their venue on Main Street in Heber.
Soldier Hollow is showing a movie Under the Stars with free screening of Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Doors open, I don't know if there's actual doors, but they said doors open at 8 p.m. and the film should start around 8:30.
Well, they're going to have to get doors now that you said that. Local choices for live music include Red Desert Ramblers at Wooden Shoe Park in Peoa, Hot House West at Silver Star Cafe, Mel Soul and Tyrone Post featuring The Messenger at the Boneyard, Band on the Moon at the Spur, and Free Peoples at the Cabin.
So that's it for Friday. Let's go on to Saturday. The Saturday events for the Camas Fiesta Days include a morning fun run, a car show, a demolition derby, fireworks, and a community dance.
And Sutton Foster performs with the Utah Symphony at the Deer Valley Music Festival. Forever Blue is at the Homestead Resort in Midway. Polyrhythmics are at the Canyons. Los Helicaminos at the Spur. Hannah Jane Kyle at the Silver Star Cafe. Wisebird at the Cabin. Snyderville Electric Band at the Boneyard.
And moving on to Sunday, the Hops Hunter Hike is on the rail trail this week, searching for wild-growing local hops, also exploring the community open space, learning about flora and fauna, and about local history. You can join the Hops Hunter Hike by meeting at the Prospector Park at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday. And local author Beverly Hurwitz will be doing a book signing at Dolly's Bookstore from 1 to 3 p.m. for her new book, Park City Hiking Guide. The Beethoven Festival will present Classicist to Impressionist at Temple Har Shalom at 3 p.m. on Sunday. Tickets can be purchased on the door or online. And finally, the Silly Market is again on Main Street with crafts, collectibles, community, food trucks, and live music.
Christy, I think we might be able to listen in a little bit to the symphony. So let me just bring them up. I think I can hear them in the back there. Just hold on a second. Nope, they're not up yet. I tell you what we're going to do is we will start with our next guest, and then we'll come back and get the symphony.
So our next guest is Leslie Peterson, Vice President of Development. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yeah. Leslie, we wanted to ask you, because your history is fascinating, your father was an opera singer who founded the Utah Opera.
He was indeed. And unfortunately, I didn't inherit any of his vocal talent, but I am so pleased to be able to continue promoting the wonderful arts organizations that he was involved in starting, including Utah Opera and Utah Symphony. And what a privilege it is to work with Summit County and the community there to help encourage the arts in Utah and music in the mountains.
Leslie, since we're talking about the Deer Valley Music Festival, can you tell us a little bit about how that started and who... what was the genesis to bring that to happen?
Utah Symphony has had a presence in Park City for many years, going back to the 1980s. However, about 15 years ago, our leadership thought what a great idea it would be to continue that tradition by starting a festival at Snow Park Lodge. And we had a number of community leaders in Park City who shared the vision of a national destination in the form of a musical festival in Park City. And the Deer Valley Resort created such a natural amphitheater that it was determined that that would be a great site for such a festival, that it would attract visitors from all over Summit County as well as the Wasatch Front, and indeed from out of state. And a lot of that vision has come to fruition today. So we're really grateful to our founders of the Deer Valley Music Festival, including such community leaders as Bill and Joanne Schiebler, the Perkins Prothrow Foundation, Susan and Jim Schwartz, and Mark and Diane Prothrow. All of them played a major role in establishing the festival and continue to support us to this day.
And this is not easy to do. I mean, there's only 15 full-time orchestras in this country, and to be able to garner all of that support and be able to bring that support in on a regular basis is just so good for all of us. And for us to be the summer home of the Utah Symphony at Deer Valley, it's just very special.
That's right, and it's one of the things that allows us to be a full-time orchestra providing music throughout the community 52 weeks out of the year. It's also become a wonderful tradition for people from the Wasatch Front to go up to Park City every summer. We see families that return year after year to have a picnic on the grass with their entire family, enjoy music under the stars, and what a fabulous backdrop to be able to perform along the Wasatch Mountains, and it's really bringing some of our best resources together, a cultural treasure in the Utah Symphony and one of our most magnificent natural resources.
And do you find that, you said about people from the Wasatch Front coming up, do you find that most of the people are in this demographic, or are people flying in and, of course, then doing the extra spending that we like lodging and restaurants and shopping?
Absolutely. When we conduct our surveys at the conclusion of every festival, we find that many people who do travel up to Park City from the Wasatch Front are stimulating the economy up there. They are staying overnight. We have a wonderful relationship with a number of lodging partners in Park City. They are having dinner up there. They are taking advantage of the natural resources as well. So the festival has grown in the same way that the community has grown up there, and we really feel like it's a great partnership that highlights the wonderful things that Summit County has to offer.
And there's no question that concert attendees are bringing spending dollars to Park City and into Summit County for the local economy. I was looking at some of the math. 87% indicated they had patronized a local restaurant. 64% had shopped in some Park City store somewhere. And 48% have actually visited Main Street. So, I mean, it's all good. And then looking at the general numbers, you know, the top line numbers, as you closed your 14th season last year in 2017, you had a 25% increase over 2016 and 110% of budget. So you're growing. The participation with the community is increasing. Everything's moving in the right direction.
Those are really great numbers that you just mentioned. And I also wanted to say that one of the great things about the festival is the variety of performers that we feature. And there's something for everybody. And so there's a great selection to choose from, and it's something that families can enjoy. People from different generations can take advantage of. It's just a wonderful asset to the community.
So you're making it really accessible to many people.
We are.
And I love the, we always announce when the locals tickets go on sale for the season, and there's a pre-sale at the visitor center on a certain day, a certain time. And I think that those numbers of how many Summit County people have attended, have bought those tickets, has increased. But that said, we're painting a very rosy picture. Are you still looking for supporters?
Of course we are. We are a 501c3, a nonprofit organization, and we receive about 30% of our budget from ticket sales, and the rest comes from generous contributions from the community. And we're very lucky to here in Utah to have a very local, loyal, and supportive arts community. However, we are always facing the challenge of increasing our contributions as well. And the Deer Valley Music Festival has been a wonderful companion piece to the performances we do down here in Salt Lake City. And the number of people who are moving into Park City have greatly contributed to our success as well.
Leslie, if you can just sit with us for a minute, we'd like to sort of listen in to what's going on in the hall. If you put your headphones on, you'll be able to hear as well. Folks, this is the Utah Symphony. They are rehearsing with Rick Springfield. Oh, they're working on something right there. Hey, you know what I wanted to ask you, Leslie? Are you the Bernadette Peters of Mozart in the Jungle?
I'm not sure how to feel about that comparison. I am a huge fan of Bernadette Peters, yeah. And in another life, I'd love to come back as her. I'm not sure that I feel exactly her role in that piece, but I like to think of aspiring to that. Thank you.
New York City's a colorful town, and that's kind of a colorful series anyway. I just got a kick out of it. I say that just in kidding, just having fun with you.
I'll keep that image in mind as I move forward. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So with your sponsors and with the folks that have been supporting you all these years, how do you find new sponsors? How do you develop new people?
That's a great question. We have a wonderful Deer Valley Music Festival Council. They work with us every year to provide direction for the festival, and they're also wonderful at bringing newcomers to Utah and to the festival to our performances. And that's a great way for us to make introductions to what we do, to invite people to enjoy the festivities at Deer Valley, and to see what impact they can have on the community. As you know, we have one of the most extensive education programs in the country, and my colleague Paula Fowler will be talking about that in a minute. But when donors see the impact that music can have on a community, they get very excited about seeing how they can help stimulate a community. It's a place to bring people together. Music has plays such an important role in our lives, and the fact that we have a flagship organization in our own community is very exciting to people from all over the nation when they come to Utah. They come here primarily to ski, for a recreational activities, to take advantage of Utah's wonderful natural resources and the climate we enjoy here. And when they discover that there is such an extraordinary and excellent musical art forms here, they're doubly delighted and oftentimes very interested in becoming supportive of what we do.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we're going to listen in again, I think, to the symphony. But have a great show tonight, and it was great to meet you, and thank you for joining us again.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Folks, that's Leslie Peterson, Vice President of Development. We're gonna continue to listen in to the symphony. We'll be right back.
you're just joining us, that is a snippet of the rehearsal from the Utah Symphony. We are live at Abravanel Hall, and we've got a microphone in their rehearsal hall. And that was, I recognize that song, I've Done Everything for You. That's a Rick Springfield song. So it was such a pleasure to be able to listen into their rehearsal, and we'll go back to that again in a little bit. We're joined now by Paula Fowler. She is the Director of Education and Community Outreach for the Utah Symphony, and she's joining us right now. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me here.
So the symphony has such a broad outreach to the community with so many amazing programs, and this is the 15th anniversary year, so there's some extra things going on. Why don't you give us some of those highlights?
I always think of our company as three companies in one. The Deer Valley Music Festival is obviously our main activity during the summer, and then we also have Utah Symphony Education Outreach and Utah Opera. So we're always thinking of all three of those projects and how can we best use our professional musicians to inspire young people and people of all ages to perhaps music making of their own, and also just to provide beautiful experiences, whether it's at a Pops concert at Snow Park, Amp Theater, or it's in a school in San Juan County when all of the students in the district have gathered.
Yeah, I read that a third of the symphony concerts are in schools.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
It's about 60 concerts every year, so we have a special and pretty famous, at least in school circles, fifth grade concert that we produce every year in Abravanel Hall. So we connect with the core curriculum, not just in music, but often in social studies as well. And we really design a concert that's just for fifth graders. And so students who are within the driving range of Abravanel can come to that. But then a good 50 concerts, the symphony getting on a bus and going to a school auditorium in a secondary school somewhere around the state, or even to a gymnasium. I think the symphony sounds pretty great in a gymnasium.
Paula, at KPCW, we broadcast live the Wednesday concert every Wednesday at Deer Valley, and they have local bands, a lot of different bands and things. So a couple Wednesdays ago, I was up there to introduce the band, which is, it's a little after 6 o'clock is when we bring the music on. And I got there early and bumped into Renee Huang, and it was so cool. You had a pop-up that occurred right there on the stage, these four or five young people that were playing symphony music, and the crowd really got into it. Tell us about these pop-ups. This is kind of new for you, but I tell you, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're really thrilled about it. We've experimented with lots of different ways of connecting with community organizations and being part of events that are already happening in Park City to really be a partner and an encourager and a presence, not just in the weekend concerts and the St. Mary's concerts. So we had a quartet from our youth guild who performed as the starter band.
Was that opening act?
Opening act. For that. And actually, we had another string quartet performing at the St. Mary's concert in the lobby this past Wednesday. So they're young people. They're, most of them are in junior high age and some high school who not only are studying privately with their own music teachers, but they are forming their own small ensembles to play classical music together. And some of them have amazing skill, and they coach sometimes with guest artists from the Utah Symphony. And they're also part of our Youth Guild. It's one of our big outreach events in addition to those 60 concerts that go around. Families can join our Youth Guild, and then they get really bargain tickets to attend symphony concerts together. But they also get service opportunities, running the coat check at symphony concerts, maybe shadowing an usher. And then we provide master classes, sometimes with our guest artists who have come during the school year and our regular season for one of our Masterworks concerts. And a lot of times with our symphony musicians as well, we'll have special things with that. They also get to go on backstage seminars and get insights into some of the Masterworks concerts as well. So it's a really great organization for young people, especially those who are interested in really learning an instrument themselves and really digging deep into that and dedicating a lot of their lives to that learning, but also to family members who just love the beauty of professional music live music making.
Well, it's great to give them that opportunity, because it's one thing to learn to play an instrument and really like that, but then there's so much more that goes to that, like actually getting on a stage, performing for an audience. You might think you're ready for that, and then you step out and like, oh my gosh. Or you might come off and be like, I love that. I thrived on that. Yeah. I'm ready to go for the next thing. And the backstage, that's great to have that opportunity. I know many years ago, the Utah Opera did a dress rehearsal at Deer Valley for Pirates of Penzance. And it was open to anyone. It was free. So I went. I took my son. He was about 5 years old at that time. And he loved it. I kind of thought, we'll sit here for a little bit and he'll run around and then we'll leave. When they went to intermission and they have a regular timed intermission so they can really practice the timing, I was like, let's go. And he's like, no, we have to stay. And I see that you have opportunities, which is final dress rehearsal, and you have access for high schoolers at the Capitol Theater.
Yeah, and actually secondary school students. So for any students at a public or charter school, it's free of charge because we have special funding that helps pay for our outreach to public and charter schools. So they can come on the Thursday night before any opening night at the Capitol Theater and see the final dress rehearsal. And in the world of opera, it's pretty much what opening night is, because that's our last chance to have everything working together. All the lighting has got to work, all the set changes need to happen just perfectly, all the artists need to be on stage at the right time doing the things that we've planned and in their costumes and with the symphony playing in the pit. And we actually try to do special things that night. We leave the curtain open during intermission so the students can watch any set change that's going to happen on stage. We also have been collecting fun facts about the wigs or something about the makeup or how many costume pieces there are that we play on the super title screen during that. And that is something I should mention, because we usually try to perform our operas in the language in which the composer wrote them. It fits the musical contours of the melodies and everything. And then we have a little screen above the stage that gives an English translation of anything. So people should never worry about not being able to understand what's going on stage, because there's a synopsis in the program and there are those super titles there. But that's a very fun night and a great way to get introduced to the world of opera.
Yeah, and with the Little Prince, the kids will like that as well.
Yeah, and the Magic Flute.
And
we've
the Magic
got really good operas and coming up for students this year. And also we're starting the season with Romeo and Juliet.
Okay.
So it's in French because a French composer wrote it, but we will have those translations. And anyone who's gone to ninth grade, I think, has studied Romeo and Juliet. So I think that would also be a great one for them to attend.
And back to the pop-ups, they're certainly good for a lot of different reasons, but one of the reasons, because the kids aren't asleep, you know, it's like during the day oftentimes. And when I go to the symphony concerts, I will see some young people at the concert, but not that many really. So the pop-ups are really good for that because you know, at the Silly Market or wherever you're popping up.
Yep. And they're short and they're casual for the most part. So it's a really nice way to get that introduction. And actually, I did want to mention that we actually have more and more people at our concerts. We have a pretty thriving high school music club program, and Park City High School is part of that. And they come down for at least four of our Masterworks concerts during the year, travel together for that, having a weekend evening out with their friends and go to the symphony and one of the opera productions. And the ticket is just $20 for the entire season for each student.
Wow. Just let us know why is music education so important to all of us, children especially? I know that's a big question, but...
Yes. Well, youth is a great time to explore all the things that people have found valuable throughout centuries and through all kinds of other lifetimes. Parents have come to value having live music experience themselves, both for social reasons, you know, for being part of the community, and also for experiences sometimes that are provoking, but a lot of times just for sheer beauty, to listen to beautiful music from all kinds of centuries and even from our own time, to beautiful vocal instruments, the amazing things that human beings can do on instruments that have such different sounds and make such harmony together. So youth is a great time. to explore that and see if students might be interested in making it themselves, maybe professionally, but maybe on the side. We have so many community orchestras in our state and community choirs, so that people do other day jobs, but then they, in the evening, they get to go make music together and be part of that harmony. I love the metaphor that that is for, you know, just being part of a community and to make harmony together. So I think that that works for people of all ages, but it's great, especially when people are young, to be introduced to how amazing and how professional it can be.
Well, I think we're very lucky to have all of these outreach programs in our community that the Utah Opera and the Utah Symphony are putting together. So thank you for all of those. And I think if people want to find something going on, they just need to look because it's all around.
Yeah, so we're there.
And the website for the Utah Symphony is
usuo.org.
Perfect. Are we going to go into the rehearsal hall?
I think so. Paula, thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for sharing our info with everybody.
Okay. Folks, we're going to go back and listen a little bit of the symphony they're rehearsing with Rick Springfield. And by the way, it's a stripped-down rehearsal, so we just want to let you know that it's not through a soundboard. They're just rehearsing. They're getting ready for tonight.
Hi, this is Whitney Ryan from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Support for KPCW comes from the Wasatch Brew Pub, open for lunch and dinner, and offering weekend brunch with traditional menu items like pub steak and eggs and eggs Benedict. Brewery tours available. Wasatch Brew Pub. We drink our share and sell the rest. WasatchBeers.com.
G'day, it's Ian from Campos Coffee. Us Aussies really love a summer as much as we love supporting KPCW. We've got Nitro Cold Brew on tap, affogatos made with Wasatch Creamery ice cream, and Mamachari kombucha made with our Cascara coffee cherry. Located above the ice rink at Park City Mountain Resort next to the Adirondack chairs. CamposCoffee.com.
We want to thank our sponsors for this program: Campos Coffee, Squatters Roadhouse Grill and Wasatch Brew Pub, Utah Symphony and Utah Opera, Peak Art and Frame, San Francisco Design, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, and Park City Mountain.
We also like to thank Renee Huang for organizing this remote broadcast with us, and also to Bob Hendricks at KPCW and to Roger Crawford, who is helping us from Detroit City, Detroit Motor City. We want to thank the Utah Symphony for letting us listen in on their rehearsal, and our guest, artist Rick Springfield, Toby Tolikin, Vice President of Artistic Development, Leslie Peterson, Vice President of Development, and I think I got everybody. And Paula Fowler, who's the Director of Education and Community Outreach for the Utah Symphony. So,
we're listening live right now to one of the parts of the rehearsal. And as we said, it is a stripped-down rehearsal. We put a mic in the rehearsal hall. They were kind enough to let us do that. So this is the preparation for tonight's program at Deer Valley Music Festival with Rick Springfield as the guest artist and Wolf Kershak as the guest conductor.
And Renee, a couple of final thoughts. We've got about 45 seconds. The concert is not sold out tonight. You still have some lawn seats available?
Yeah, we still have tickets. So if people wanted to go to DeerValleyMusicFestival.org, they can get some tickets there. And I wanted to just reiterate that our community pop-ups are in thank you to Park City and Summit County for being our summer home for the past 15 years. Community events are available to check out on our website under community events. And we have two people who are playing at the Silly Market this weekend. So come out to that. A couple gallery shows. Lots of fun and unexpected music.
You are listening to KPCW in Park City. Well, Christy, a lot of fun, huh?
It's great being down here at Abravanel Hall.
What a facility, huh?
Yeah.
Everybody's been so supportive.
There's a lot that goes into a remote, but we're glad to do it.
NPR National News is next.